Welcome back, everyone, and welcome to the meeting of the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Committee. Jessica, would you please call the roll?
Trustee John Butler.
Here.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Here.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Here.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Here.
Trustee Aiden Shields.
I'm here.
Trustee Eric Wazowicz.
Here.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Committee Chair Rita Athus.
Here. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum and that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Good morning, Madam Chair. You have a quorum present and appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Open Meetings Act.
Thank you. And may I have a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting?
So moved, Madam Chair. Gail.
Second, Wazowicz.
And Jessica, would you please call the roll for a vote?
Trustee John Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Trustee Aiden Shields.
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wazowicz.
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Committee Chair Rita Athus.
Yes. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the August 20th, 2020 meeting?
So moved, Pritchard.
Second, Butler.
Okay, that was Pritchard and Butler. Jessica, will you call the roll for a vote?
Yes. Trustee John Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales.
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero.
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard.
Yes.
Trustee Aiden Shields.
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wazowicz.
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima.
Yes.
Committee Chair Rita Athus.
Yes. Thank you, and the minutes are approved. At this time, I'd like to recognize the members of the University Advisory Committee representing our Research and Innovation, Legal and Legislative. Do any of you have any comments for the board?
Good morning, Rita. I just one brief comment beyond what I report at Academic Affairs, which is I want to commend my faculty colleagues for their continued effort at procuring research funding. I don't want to steal Jerry's thunder, but even in these trying COVID times, faculty continue to ply their trade and procure funding, and I'm pleased to see the success. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Great. So I would just like to make a few comments. I think several of you saw that Northern was listed in the university's worldwide, the Global Universities report, one of only 10. And I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, Jerry.
That's okay.
One of only 10 universities in Illinois. And this is given by, it's weighted towards research. 25% of the criteria is research, and another 10% is publication. And also our physics program got special recognition. So I just wanted to congratulate you, Dr. Blasey, and the whole department and everyone that's involved in this. I think this is a worldwide global recognition is super for the department and especially for the university. And really appreciate that.
Here, here, here.
The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is that you're going to notice on the agenda, we have a report from Brian Perry from the Consul's office. This is something that we used to do some time ago. And while we always hear from Mr. Perry on things that are imminent, it seemed like a good idea because of the importance of legal and all the ramifications for the university that we get an overview of the General Counsel's department. And so you will see that later on the agenda. And hopefully it's something we'll do periodically over time. And I really appreciate the fact that Mr. Perry was so open to allowing us to do that. And now I would like to ask our Vice President for Research and Innovation, Dr. Jerry Blasey, for news items and comments.
Thank you, Chair Athus, and good morning to the committee.
I agree with Kendall that our faculty have risen to the challenge posed by the pandemic, and they have continued and expanded their entrepreneurial and scholarly achievements. And I'd just like to give you a few highlights from the past months, and these are by no means inclusive, and I apologize for incompleteness, but would like to illustrate the breadth of their achievements. So they've won boards, they've won book awards and fellowships. For example, Dr. Brad Sarigren from psychology was recently elected a fellow of the Society for Personality and Social Psychology. And being a fellow of your professional society is a big deal. And I think a moment of applause would be appropriate.
You're here.
Another great example is Dr. Emma Kubi from the Department of English, who won the George Lewis Beer Prize in European International History for her book on political survivors, the resistance, the Cold War, and the fight against concentration camps after 1945. I don't know about the rest of you, but I would be very happy to win a beer prize for my scholarship. They've also created new partnerships, which merit a few moments discussion because I think they really show the vitality of our scholarly community. Although we were saddened to learn Discover Financial will be discontinuing their student program at 71 North, we were immediately heartened by a new collaborative program with Nokia. And a special note of thanks to Vice President Katsonis and OERD for recognizing and facilitating this collaboration. This January, if all goes as planned, Nokia will be sponsoring two teams of five undergraduate and graduate students to develop and field test software applications. The teams will be mentored by staff from Nokia and will be working out of 71 North. So in many ways, 71 North has met the vision of a place where we can collaborate with the private sector, and we're setting up company is setting up shop down there.
And I see, Dr. Blasey, that there's a question from Trustee Barsima.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Rita. And I'm sorry if I've got some background noise. Of course, you know, we've got mowers going on outside on this day, but I will try to stay on mute as much as I can. But when Discover left 71 North, is that a permanent move, or is this just a pause that they're taking to kind of reassess their program?
It is a permanent shutdown of the program. They've decided to consolidate their HR programs more centrally, and so they've discontinued the program. The great news is they've been great. They continue to be great partners. They're leaving almost all the equipment for us so that we can continue to collaborate with other partners downstairs. And they will be out on January 4th.
Did they communicate to us anything we could have done that we could have done better or different? Or was there any dissatisfaction that they had with the program?
No, I think it was they did not communicate anything, Trustee Barsima. I think it was, quite frankly, in my judgment, it was a cost-cutting measure. In fact, Mike Brennan and Joel Suchimo were very complimentary and thanked us very much for the collaboration.
Great, great. Well, congratulations on the new relationship with Nokia. That's great.
Thank you. So we've also developed some partnerships that have encompassed COVID research and diagnosis. For example, Dr. Barry Bode, who is now the director of COVID facilities for NIU, is working with Kishwaukee Water Reclamation District to test effluent for the virus. This will provide sentinel observation of neighborhoods and dorms and will give us information to target individual testing in the future. This type of surveillance has been done by other universities with good success. With respect to individual testing, Dr. Beth Gilliard and her team at NIU and her collaborators elsewhere have developed a powerful new diagnostic test that's complementary to the current PCR standard. The test is promising in that it appears to be more sensitive, adaptable, and easier to administer. It's now being validated against the gold standard PCR tests. And in fact, we are inviting participants at next week's pre-Thanksgiving tests to provide samples alongside their PCR test so that we can get a better sense of the efficacy of this new test. And we also are beginning to consider business plans for this test and discussing them with possible investors. So as these examples indicate, even with the constraints, and remarkably, in response to the pandemic, our faculty and staff continue to be extremely successful. And I'd also like to note that these have been highly collaborative efforts reaching across the campus involving numerous divisions, including academic affairs, outreach, RIPS, facilities and finance, and general counsel, and the general counsel. I would just observe that as an institution, we are showing great nimbleness at this time with good focus on the university mission. So those are just a little examples and highlights of what's going on. There's a lot more, and I apologize that there's not time to discuss all of our great achievements.
Thank you, Dr. Blasey. And as I said, you'll hear the noise in the background. Why Dennis has lawnmowers, I have a check on our fire system. So that's what you're hearing. There isn't a fire. I'd like to just go back to a minute with the opening when I talked about our inclusion in the worldwide global universities. And Chairman Barsima pointed out, and I should have, that NIU was ranked ahead of IIT, Loyola, DePaul, and Illinois State. So again, that was a great achievement, and congratulations again. And I see that Trustee Wozniak has a question. Eric? Are you muted?
I'm mute. I don't have anything in the background at my house. Jerry, it's exciting what we have going on with the gargle test. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand is that we're going to be doing swab and gargle at the same time.
Right.
Prove things out.
Correct.
I mean, if this does prove out with the numbers, this could be extremely exciting. Do we know what the time frame is for getting the results on the test?
So two ways to answer the question. The individual test, we get turnaround in an hour or so once we get it into the lab. So it's even faster depending on what the throughput is. So that's quite quick. Whether or not we can take this out as a test for diagnostics, that's a little hard to say. There's something called emergency use approval, and that can take a bit of time to get in. That's a bit difficult to predict.
Okay. I mean, I'm extremely excited about this. I mean, not only I think we will get past the virus here at some point, but for down the road, there will be other things that come up. And I just, this really puts NIU on the map in a big way. So congratulations.
Thank you. Trustee Wasowicz, you're correct. One of the features of this new test is it can recognize other viruses and evolution of the virus as it mutates. So it's very complementary to the PCR test in that respect.
And this is a thing where I guess next week we'll have people take a swab and then they will gargle for 30 seconds.
Yeah, so we'll be asked, when they come in for their PCR swab, we'll ask them if they would be interested in taking providing a gargle sample, which is really easy. It's not uncomfortable. And we're hoping a lot of people will take advantage of this opportunity to help move our research forward.
Okay. I know Trustee Gale's wife is a dentist, and when you go to the dentist these days, they make you rinse your mouth out for a minute. So 30 seconds should not be that big of a deal. So this is exciting.
Thank you.
Thanks for the plug, too.
I just wish Dennis would not have his wife cut the grass. That's a whole other story. So.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Blasey. Any other questions on Dr. Blasey's report? If not, we'll move into the university reports. Our first one is on state legislation, and I believe that Jenna is going to give us that report.
Good morning. Thank you, Rita. It is great to see you all virtually. Thank you for your indulgence in accepting a verbal report. Things remain very fluid, and I appreciate being able to deliver a most relevant report. My report today includes updates on various miscellaneous, albeit relevant, topics, including an overview of election results. I want to quickly start by providing two exciting updates to my last report to you all in August. In August, I mentioned that IBHE had set aside $3 million from the pool of the Governor's Emergency Education Relief, or GEAR, funds for targeted initiatives. This provided an opportunity for public and nonprofit four-year institutions to receive additional funding to support programs targeting enrollment and retention of underrepresented first-generation and high-need students through an RFP process administered by IBHE. I'm happy to report back to the board that on October 15th, NIU received notice that its proposal was selected as a recipient of additional funds, with just over $456,000, or just over 15% of total dollars available, being awarded to NIU. And we received authorization on October 28th to begin spending these funds. A great congratulations to Provost Ingram and Vice President Blasey on crafting such a successful proposal. In August, I also reported that many capital projects were on hold and in a holding pattern due to COVID-19 and its impact on revenues necessary to fund the projects. In October, NIU received a notice from the Illinois Capital Development Board that money was available to begin moving forward with the planning process of NIU's new health IT building. This is a very exciting and crucial step in the process. Moving on, I want to briefly recap Illinois' election results, specifically limited to state government for the purposes of my report. Watching this year's election results come in has been quite a roller coaster, primarily due to the volume of early voting and vote by mail. I want to preface all of this by saying that prior to Election Day, the Illinois State Board of Elections advised media and voters to be aware that unofficial vote totals reported on election night and the days thereafter may change significantly in the 2 weeks to follow. Illinois allows ballots that are postmarked no later than Election Day to arrive and be counted for 2 weeks afterward, so totals could change through November 17th. Additionally, all results are considered unofficial until the State Board of Elections certifies results on December 4th. That said, and while a few legislative races are too close to call or candidates have yet to concede, we do know a significant amount of unofficial results. Highlights include the following. The constitutional amendment pertaining to Illinois' tax structure did not receive the support necessary, which was 60% yes votes, and it has been declared failed. Despite mail-in ballots still trickling in, the measure is not expected to come close to the threshold necessary for passage, and proponents of the initiatives have conceded. Illinois' income tax structure will remain flat, and I will discuss the impact of this result as it relates to the state budget in just a few minutes. In the General Assembly, the Senate Democrats hold a total of 40 seats, increasing the caucus's supermajority by one over the current General Assembly. The Senate Republicans hold 18 seats, which is a loss of one, and there was an immediate change in caucus leadership. The day after the election, Senate Republican leader Bill Brady announced he would not seek re-election as leader in the 102nd General Assembly. And the day after that, the caucus met and voted for Senator Dan McConkie from Senate District 26 to be leader-elect. The House Democrats hold a total of 72 seats, currently a net loss of two, but they are still holding on to their supermajority status. House Republicans hold a total of 46 seats, a net gain of two. And the race for House District 68, which is held by the House Republicans currently, is too close to call. The winning candidate likely will not be known until November 17th at the earliest. And this might be one race to anticipate a recount. The candidates are currently within less than 60 votes of each other the last time that I visited the unofficial results. Moving on to an update on state funding for FY21 and FY22's process. The failure of the tax amendment adds an additional $1.3 billion to the General Revenue Fund's budget gap in FY21 for the state of Illinois, making the total gap between enacted spending and estimated revenues $6.3 billion. The state's FY21 revenues are currently projected to be $6.3 billion shy of total FY21 appropriations, and obligated payments. It was $5 billion, just to recap, it was $5 billion prior to the amendment failing. While NIU has not yet been told to hold back a lapse amount, as the governor's executive agencies have been, nor have we seen a formal proposal from the legislature that seeks to reduce our FY21 appropriations, as was done mid-year in FY15, the budget deficit will very likely cause unexpected delays in obligated payments. I say this to caution that we could run into a situation where the state's general revenue and education assistance funds simply do not have the cash on hand to make timely payments to state agencies, including public universities. Since the amendment's failure, the governor has made comments about what the tax amendment's failure means for the state of Illinois, including notes of budget cuts up to 15% and tax increases for all Illinois residents. That said, there have been no specifics or actions in motion to follow through on these statements at this time. It remains very fluid and unclear as to what actions will be taken to address the state's budget deficit for FY21. So that said, the situation obviously remains very fluid, and I've been in frequent communication with Vice President Chania and her team to ensure that we are coordinated and informed across the university. In terms of where NIU currently stands as far as receipt of state payment for the current fiscal year, to date we have received $17.3 million, or roughly 20% of our FY21 appropriation. We have been informed that the plan for the Education Assistance Fund going forward is to continue with payments to NIU of $8.8 million per month for the rest of the fiscal year, with the exception of February of 2021. As I just indicated, we should be prepared for the schedule and plan to change, as the Education Assistance Fund, from which NIU receives its payments, relies solely on the state's general revenue cash flow. So it's very likely that the fund will not have the cash on hand to be able to get payments out the door. In terms of the process for building the FY22 budget, the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, in coordination with IBHE, has asked NIU and its sister institutions to provide information on various scenarios for the next fiscal year, ranging from a maintenance level of funding, a 5% cut, a 10% cut, and Board of Trustee approved levels, including increased funding for institutional priorities. In addition to these scenarios, NIU was specifically asked by IBHE to provide our list of legislative agenda items, particularly items of regulatory relief, to be put forth to the Governor's Office of Management and Budget to offset budget reductions. I have respectfully indicated that our number one priority and must have is a stable budget from the state of Illinois, and have argued that any of the other reforms on our list of legislative priorities would not in any way adequately absorb or offset a reduction in state funding, especially coming off the pandemic, which we aren't even out of the woods. Higher education simply has done its part. We've weathered nearly two decades of appropriations cuts from the state, down nearly 50% from FY02. We've innovatively decreased institutional spending in more ways than thought possible. We continue to produce the state's workforce, which provides Illinois with a return on investment that is more than five times greater than our annual appropriation. And most importantly, we've continued to annually invest millions of institutional dollars in financial aid to reduce barriers despite our significant budget challenges. Now we're at a crossing point where we need lawmakers to make higher education a spending priority, and we need IBHE's help getting there. The best and most immediate way for the agency to do this is by having its board recommend nothing less than full funding and adequate funding for NIU and all of the public universities. Switching gears to an update on upcoming legislative sessions. This week, the House and Senate leadership announced the cancellation of the veto session, which was originally scheduled for November 17th to the 19th and December 1st through the 3rd, citing Springfield's spike in COVID-19 cases, as well as a lack of substantial veto messages from the governor to address. The end of the term for the 101st General Assembly is January 13th, 2021, on which date the 102nd General Assembly will be inaugurated. At the time of this report, it is not officially clear if the 101st General Assembly will convene for a lame duck session prior to the end of its term. Along with uncertainty of a lame duck session, there is also significant uncertainty in terms of what the spring session will look like. The calendar for spring sessions is typically distributed at the end of each veto session each fall. Considering the fluidity of the pandemic and what the General Assembly plans to do or could do, it is unclear when the session schedule will be announced or if that process will look different this year. Perhaps seeing a budget or a schedule that is released and then reevaluated a certain point in time based on where we're at with the pandemic. Despite not having a clear picture of what this regular session will look like, the group of public university government relations folks have been meeting to craft an updated joint public university legislative agenda for spring 2021 for presidents and chancellors' consideration. The group has another meeting later today to finalize a first draft for submission to our respective presidents and chancellors for their collective discussion during an upcoming presidents and chancellors call. I will beat the drum once more and note adequate and stable funding remains the number one shared priority among all of our institutions. Our joint efforts are especially important this year as Illinois faces very tough budget decisions and higher education remains one of the only sectors whose funding is not protected by court order, consent decree, or any other type of statutory minimum funding level. That's not education as a whole. K through 12 does have a statutory protection in terms of a minimum funding level. Higher education does not have that protection. Switching gears from what the public universities plan to proactively advocate for to what we expect to see from the legislature, for the past several months, the Senate has been holding virtual committee hearings spanning many sectors to discuss legislative priorities, specifically the policy priorities of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus. Committees pertaining to higher education priorities heard testimony on various issues, with the common lens being equity and how Illinois lawmakers can address systemic inequities through higher education policy. Topics discussed have included equitable funding for public universities, the exploration of a new funding model for higher education, developmental education, holistic approaches to student support services, educator preparation and diversifying the educator pipeline, and workforce development. NIU has submitted written testimony regarding developmental education and student support services to members of the committee. Additionally, John Furr from Ed Systems Center at NIU was asked to verbally testify at the most recent hearing to discuss the center's ongoing work regarding workforce development. Just this week, university liaisons received a comprehensive list of legislative priorities that have come out of the higher education subject matter hearings. A few items include full funding of the monetary award program, legislation creating a more holistic approach to student support services that address the needs of today's students, scaling up developmental education reforms and funding the ICCB and IBHE Innovation Fund and Center for Student Success to scale evidence-based models and approaches to developmental education, and addressing barriers to teacher licensure, including increased investment in the Minority Teacher Initiative Scholarship Program. Bills have not yet been filed and language has yet to be circulated on these priorities. Additionally, costs associated with these priorities have yet to be calculated. As of this week, stakeholders, including advocacy organizations, IBHE and ICCB, have been meeting with lawmakers to turn the priorities into draft legislation. Individual university representatives have not been included in these meetings. The Board of Higher Education has been invited to represent the public university's various interests as a whole. As NIU's Director of State Relations, I'm actively meeting with legislators and stakeholders who are at the table to ensure awareness of what NIU is already doing and would like to be able to do in these areas, and also to ensure that our mission, vision, and values is represented in forthcoming policy proposals. While statewide efforts are necessary to adequately address equity, one-size-fits-all approaches are generally inequitable and hinder universities' abilities to be flexible and make true progress for their unique student populations. In terms of recent and some upcoming events, I will quickly wrap up here. Prior to the pandemic, my work weeks during non-session months really included a significant amount of travel throughout the state, meeting with legislators and hosting and co-hosting events in different regions. The pandemic has required adaptation and moving to virtual events. So far, while they are not the same, they have been successful. And I will quickly wrap up by noting an event recently held and making a pitch for an upcoming event in December that we're very excited about. First, on October 23rd, NIU co-hosted a virtual event with the Partnership for College Completion to bring institutions and legislators together for a discussion on equity, specifically focusing on plans in place at institutions, our ILLIA equity plan at NIU, and followed by the policy interests of legislators. Dr. Edshel Walden represented NIU on the institutional panel, along with colleagues from Chicago State University and Joliet Junior College. Representatives Chris Welch, Representative Nick Smith, and Senator Selena Villanueva were the representatives on the legislative panel. Despite a 9 a.m. start time, there were over 165 attendees, and the event really laid the groundwork for continued discussions with legislators regarding NIU's commitment to equity and identifying where we can work together with lawmakers and be a resource as they pursue enactment of state policies in support of closing equity gaps. Lastly, on December 8th, NIU State Relations will be co-hosting a virtual event with the NIU Alumni Association that will provide attendees with a look on how Illinois lawmakers and advocates are adapting their business as usual during the time of a global pandemic. And attendees will hear from myself and Illinois State Representative and NIU College of Law alum Bob Morgan about the current state of legislative affairs in Illinois, an outlook on what to expect from lawmakers during the next legislative session beginning in January, and how the Illinois General Assembly and associated stakeholders are adjusting to their practices during the COVID-19 pandemic. This concludes my prepared remarks. I'm happy to yield for any questions that members may have. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jenna, for that very comprehensive and somber report. I mean, really shows that as the Board of Trustees, we're going to be happy to be extremely diligent in supporting NIU's legislative positions. Is there any way, especially the beginning of your report, you know, I appreciate that you gave it verbally, but that we could have some of that in writing as we go forward? I mean, it was so informative. I think it would be helpful, especially some of the facts and figures that you had. You don't have to do the whole thing, but kind of a summary of that, I personally would find really helpful.
I'm happy to send my written remarks to Liz Wright and have her circulate that however is necessary in terms of keeping in mind that this is a public meeting.
Great, I really appreciate that. And we do have a few questions. Chairman Barsima.
Yeah, thank you, Rita. And thank you, Jenna, for all of the great work that you do. That's a tough job, and particularly now. But we appreciate your efforts very much. I don't know if Vice President Shania is on or not, but if I was just kind of rolling through the numbers that you stated, Jenna, in my head on the state appropriations for this year, and I thought you had mentioned that we had received of the $88 million or close to that that we're supposed to receive this year in state appropriations, that we had received 16 of that so far ish and that we were going to be receiving $8+ million for each month for the rest of the year with the exception of February. That doesn't add up to 87 almost 88 million. So have we been cut, or have we been told we're going to be cut, or do I just have my numbers wrong?
No, I think that's a good question, and one that we went back and forth with a little as we've been validating the numbers. So to date, we've received about just a little over 17 million, about 17.3. Jenna was correct. We'll receive a consistent amount monthly. It will extend, however, throughout the summer. So I think you're probably about 9 million short if your figures tie to how we first calculated the numbers. So we'll receive one extra payment for fiscal 21 in technically what would be fiscal 22. So we expect the payments to run through July, August, which would overlap with the next fiscal year. But right now, we're hearing the same report that Jenna is, that according to the comptroller's office, the state comptroller's office, they are planning on releasing to us a consistent amount of funding monthly that will amount to our full appropriation.
Okay, great, good. Thank you.
Thank you, and I think we have a question from Trustee Gales.
Yeah, my question really is in the state appropriations vein as well. And forgive me because my memory is kind of short on this, but I just read an article a couple of days ago about the cannabis revenues. And I can't remember how much of those revenues were supposed to be earmarked to higher education. Am I wrong in saying that? And if some of those dollars are earmarked for us, is that number a part of the appropriations that we've already been allotted or will be allotted?
That's a great question. I will need to look into the cannabis fund statutory language to see how those revenues are distributed. I know that NIU's appropriation is received solely from the Education Assistance Fund, but that said, there could be something in the provisions that allocates a certain percentage of cannabis revenues to that fund through the General Revenue Fund. But it's something that I'm going to have to look into and get back to you on. That said, to your point about whether or not this is already considered in the funding that we've been appropriated, that would have been revenues that was projected at the beginning of this last budget cycle for FY21. So it would already be accounted for in this year's appropriations.
Thank you.
Are there any additional questions for Jenna? If not, Jen, I want to second Trustee Barsima and congratulate you on doing an outstanding job in probably what has to be one of the most difficult times in the General Assembly that we've had in decades. So thank you very much for your work. The next item on our agenda is our federal legislative report, and I believe that Dr. Blasey is going to give that report.
Yes, that's correct. Assistant Vice President Anna Quetter sends her regrets that she's unable to join today's meeting. She's presently serving on the Marshall Scholarship Selection Committee for the British Embassy in Washington, D.C., which is a position she holds for an appointment from the British Ambassador to the United States. Her participation is extremely valuable for NIU as it informs our approach to national scholarships and ensures NIU and institutions like NIU have a voice in these types of selections. So we thought hard about it, but thought it would be better for her to participate in that scholarship selection. So instead, I'll be giving her report, and I hope you'll bear with me. She'll be joining the board meeting later today, and we should have an opportunity for you to ask her questions at that time. So as everyone's aware, national elections were held on November 3rd. All 435 members of the House of Representatives, one third of the Senate, including one Illinois seat, and the presidency and vice presidency were up for election. To recap the results, Vice President Joe Biden is the president-elect, and Senator Kamala Harris is the vice president-elect of the United States. The House of Representatives will remain in Democratic control with one of the narrowest margins in history. It looks to be something like 3-5. Control of the Senate comes down to a January runoff election for two seats in Georgia. The Republicans need to win only one seat to maintain control of the chamber, and that is relative with respect to the next administration's platform. Turning closer to home, in Illinois, Senator Dick Durbin has won re-election. In the House, Marie Newman will replace Dan Lipinski in the 3rd District, and Mary Miller will replace John Shimkus in the 15th District. Incumbent Lauren Underwood has a narrow lead in the 14th District, but it has not yet been called. That said, the Illinois delegation is shaping up to have the same partisan composition as it does now, which is 2 Democratic senators, 13 House Democrats, and 5 House Republicans. President-elect Biden is calling for bipartisan cooperation and national unity following a bitterly divided election. However, President Trump and some congressional Republicans have questioned the results, and President Trump has not yet conceded the election. It is unclear how President Trump will approach legislation during the remainder of his term. Senate Majority Leader McConnell has expressed interest in completing a COVID relief bill before the end of the year. Higher education has fared well in most of the bill language that were proposed before the elections, so we expect higher education to remain a bipartisan priority as negotiations resume. Funding for the federal government must be extended by December 11th to avoid a shutdown. While Majority Leader McConnell has said recently he would like to enact an omnibus funding package, it is more likely a short-term continuing resolution will materialize to keep the government open into the start of the Biden administration. Looking ahead to the next year, much depends on whether Congress remains under divided rule. If it does, we can expect a continuation of congressional gridlock. If the Democrats win the Senate, we can expect to see more ambitious legislation. The Biden administration is expected to quickly enact executive orders that roll back several of President Trump's executive orders. At least some of the rollback would benefit NIU, in particular restoring the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or the DACA program, and retracting the recent EO on limitations for on federal training for federal contractors. The detailed Biden-Harris platform has many possible areas of interest for NIU. These include infrastructure, especially research infrastructure, something we've been advocating for the last several years, educating the 21st century workforce, economic development spurred by innovation and research, and job creation through manufacturing. Regarding funding, higher education research are likely to be high priority investment areas for the Biden administration. The Office of Federal Relations is seeking opportunities to appropriately position NIU and our federal priorities for success in the new environment. We are working in close coordination with our sister institutions in Illinois, Higher Education Associates, APLU, and ACE, and coalitions whose members include higher ed institutions, scientific societies, and the private sector. I'll just note, just as Jenna indicated, she's working closely with her colleagues at the other state universities. Dr. Quiter is doing the same at the federal level. As mentioned in the past, as part of our long game, we are actively seeking opportunities for our faculty and staff to participate in hearings and advisory boards relevant to the administration's priorities. That concludes the federal report. Again, Assistant Vice President Quiter will be joining the call around noon today, and she would welcome any of your questions. I might be able to field a few of them, but we could also wait for Dr. Quiter.
Are there any questions for Dr. Blasey? You know, I know that this is you would need a crystal ball on this, but the fact that you said the Biden platform and agenda seems to have more of a emphasis on science and research, but having a partisan Congress makes how much of that gets done is going to be very, very difficult. But you have a feel for, you know, the types of things they're looking for or the types of things that they might be more open to.
Well, in terms of science, it's clear that they are promoting a lot of the same initiatives as the Trump administration: artificial intelligence, quantum information systems, high performance computing. They are also focusing on manufacturing. They have a markedly different approach to climate science, and I would expect that we will see increased emphasis on that. Recall that even under the Trump administration, Congress kept our research and development funding relatively stable, and I think we would see that level of funding perhaps a little higher. In terms of what the executive branch can do, I think we would see renewed vigor in the Office of Science and Technology Policy and interagency cooperation on all of these initiatives. So the gridlock probably is not going to impact science and the STEM fields as much as other sectors of the government. And I think we should see some increase in funding going forward.
I agree.
That's my prediction, Trustee Appice.
Okay. And like I said, I know we don't have crystal balls, but it's nice to hear that. Are there any additional questions? If not, we will move on to item 7C, sponsored program report, and that is a written report. So are there any questions on that report? I did want to point out that Dara Little has been elected to the Board of Directors of the International Research Administrative Board. And again, that not only to congratulate her for that, but also since I've been on the board, it has been something that's been really good for me to see the number of NIU administrators, faculty who participate and are recognized by their peers on national and international boards. So congratulations to DARA. So there are no questions on the sponsored program report. Okay, if not, we'll move on to 7D, the General Counsel's report. Mr. Perry, and again, really appreciate the fact that you have taken the time to share with us one of the really important aspects of the university that becomes even more and more critical.
More than happy to do that. Madam Chair, I'll give my report back up in the agenda if we could. I just want to have the record clear that we did not have anyone registered for public comment today.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Good morning, trustees. As usual, I sit with you as parliamentarian to the board, but lucky enough to present about the great work being done in the Office of General Counsel. If we go to the next slide, please. You know, there's a saying about it's never a good idea to give a lawyer a microphone in a captive audience, but given the need for brevity, I will try to be brief and give you information that you may not know about the General Counsel's office and point out some highlights of some of the great work we've just like the university has a mission, the Office of General Counsel also has a mission. We have a mission because we have guiding principles that decide what we do, how we do it, and core beliefs as attorneys and lawyers for the university. You can read the slide 2 and slide 3 because it goes through our mission, but what I want to highlight is that our job is to protect and promote the mission and values of the university. Minimize not just the legal risk, but we also minimize any significant public or reputational risk to the university. Slide 3, please. So in addition to being lawyers, you know that we litigate, we draft contracts, and provide legal advice. We also are problem solvers. We are thought partners with the academic and administrative leaders of the university, and we're here to help the university and the board accomplish their institutional objectives. Since my time in Northern, I've always stressed to the team that we always want to add value to the work that comes to us. What that has turned into is meaning sometimes we say no to work if it's not legal work because we're not adding value. Often there are transactions that have become routine, and instead of being inefficient and have routine matters come to us, we work with units and you know what? Let us work and create a standard template so you will have something you can use to make you more efficient, and we can focus our work on where there are issues, where the university needs the highest legal focus. And that's resulted in more efficiency and also more work coming to the General Counsel's office where we can add value. I've always had the philosophy, I've never wanted the Office of General Counsel to be looked at as just another administrative stop that a unit has to pass through to get something done, or to see a lot of work going to an initiative or a plan only to get to us for us to say, no, this can't happen. And be honest, we usually don't say no. Of course, if you come to us with something that's illegal or unethical, we will say no in a heartbeat. But generally speaking, if something comes to us, very rarely say no. We say, what are your goals? Here's how best. Wait a minute. Trustee Gale said he can't see the slides.
Is anyone else having that issue?
No, I can see them.
I can too.
I can see him.
Okay. I can see him.
Okay. And maybe Tony or Liz, if you could work with Trustee Gales, I'm not sure the issue he's having on his end. But saying that, everyone is to be an arbitrary stop in the process. And every document we draft, the advice we provide, we always ask, just because something can be done, is it consistent with NIU's mission, vision, and values? Is it consistent with our mission, vision, and values as lawyers? And just because we can, should we do it? We advise about legal. Also advise beyond that, and any advice we provide, every transaction, we look at the overall impact of the university as a whole. We go to the next slide, please. This is the probably the most proudest moment I have during this presentation. You hear from me and see me often. You hear from Greg and see him quite a bit. There are a lot of members of the OGC team that do a tremendous amount of work that's vital to the university, but don't often get the attention that they deserve. On our transactional side, Laura Seiler and Tiffany Miller do most of our transactional work. So Laura's portfolio is primarily in athletics. So when you see the Huskies on TV, when you look at the schedules of upcoming games, when we hire new coaches, when we look at gender equity and compliance in athletics, that's primarily the work of Laura that you're seeing. She works very closely with athletics, and she also helps negotiate all of our coaching. Tiffany Miller, when you hear about, say, biology opening a new program in South America, or you hear about visiting professors coming in from other countries to spend a semester teaching or do research, work of Tiffany. And both of them do work for facilities. So most of our leasing agreements come through the two of them, and also affiliation agreements. If you're not familiar with affiliation agreements, and School of Health and Human Sciences and School of Education, when our students need to go into the classroom or to a clinical, Laura and Tiffany work on those affiliation agreements so students can be placed and get the experience that they need. This is not a minor task, especially on the health and human science side. As these clinical positions open up, there are very few opportunities for students to go into hospitals or clinics. So there's always a time domain that's involved where if there's a spot that's open, we have to turn around affiliation agreements pretty quickly. As you can imagine, in this COVID environment, that has increased the time and complexity of these affiliation agreements. And if a student misses out on getting a, it can delay their overall graduation date and derail their education. And as we know, for our students, many first-generation students, keeping them on track to graduation forward. So the work they do, particularly on that side, and what they have done in this past semester has been tremendous. On our litigation side, we have James Gugliotto, who we affectionately call Jim G, and Tom O'Grady. I will speak a little more about Jim's contributions when we get to some of the labor and employment matters. But Tom is central and a huge reason why the Office of Counsel and the university has cut outside legal costs exponentially. Tom has stepped up and taken on new cases outside of his usual matters, in addition to his advice work, and he's been invaluable to the difference that we've seen in using outside counsel and just an overall increase in litigation. Can we go to the next slide? Supporting the attorneys, we have a talented staff of Carrie Lee Skanowski, Carrie Larkin, Gigi Beard, Crystal Doyle, and we have a legal intern. Carrie is both handle our litigation and our contracts work. As you can imagine, as a legal office for the university, the documents that come in and the forms are a tremendous amount over the course of a year. Carrie helped the office stay focused on the administrative side so the lawyers can focus on the legal work. Gigi helps with our budget to make sure we don't overspend and we stay under budget. The newest addition to our team, Crystal Doyle. Crystal splits her time between working for the board, working for her chief of staff, and working for us. She's the newest addition, but her contributions have been invaluable. We're lucky to have her. And we also have a legal intern. We often get left out of the discussion sometimes because we are kind of a service provider, but we are part of a university, and we're a university with a law. So we see it incumbent upon our duty to make sure that we are helping to train the next generation of lawyers. I like to think that the person who's going to take my job is over at NIU Law School now, and one day we'll be able to stay in the Husky family and come over to the Office of General Counsel. So we see that as an important role, and we have one intern, and we like to have more, but due to budget issues that every other unit is facing, right now we have one third-year student who's doing a tremendous job, and we're going and this attorney. Next slide, please. Some of this is basic information I know that you already know, but I just wanted to run through some of the highlights. Our sole client is the university. We don't do outside work. We do not handle any legal matters that are private or personal to employees that are outside of their scope of work. We do not help sue the university. Although it may seem pretty obvious, we do occasionally get requests of people coming in asking, how can I sue NIU? And we have to tell them that you have the wrong office, that we actually defend the university. But thank you for the heads up, and you know, we'll prepare accordingly, but we do get those requests at times. Next slide, please. So some of the work we do is, as you know, I'm parliamentarian to the board, help with Open Meetings Act questions and public comments. I'm also counsel to the board. I am your lawyer. So as the board has questions about their roles, responsibilities, I am always available as well as my team to assist. We provide legal advice and counsel to the rest of the university, from the board all the way down to the staff level. And we review most of the agreements across the spectrum of work that's done to university. We work closely with procurement, obviously, on the academic side, again, the affiliation agreements. We work with research, real estate transaction, leasing in and leasing out property, as well as the IP needs of the university. Next slide, please. Of course, we do litigation, but there are some services that OGC provides that some of the trustees may not know. One of the things that we do is that we provide and work with the Bursar's office for collection action. So as student accounts go delinquent, we help in the collection. And in addition to providing legal risk, we also help generate revenue for the university by helping in the collection efforts. We process all bankruptcy notices and payroll garnishments, and we support many of committees and work groups that work throughout the university as needed, some on an ex officio basis, or sometimes even just for one piece of advice, but we're always available to assist in the process. Next slide, please. So some of the additional services have changed over the past year. Shortly before I started, I believe, or shortly thereafter, it was decided that the supervision of the FOIA office would be best served in OGC. And so in addition to the attorneys and the staff mentioned previously, we also have Joan Lorino and Matt Cabrera, who are FOIA officers. That component is managed by Tom O'Grady. So as FOIA requests come in, Joan process them at the first level, Tom does the legal review, and then we comply with the request and make sure all exemptions are noted, and we are complying with the Illinois Freedom of Information Act. As one of my goals coming in a year and a half ago, I was tasked with working with Dr. Ingram on reimagining human resources for the university. So as we looked at restructuring and reorganizing and eventually hiring a permanent HR director, it was decided the provision of the non-academic unions and labor relations would be under me in OGC. So when I got up off the floor after finding that out, I met with Jesse Perez and Derek Williams to find out the breadth of work that needed to be done. And I have to say, given even usual circumstances, having 15 different collective bargaining agreements governing a significant portion of the workforce is a challenge. But in the COVID environment, despite those challenges, I think this team has done an exceptional amount. You don't have to go any further than look at some of our sister institutions and some of the issues they've had with union activity as they've returned to work. We've not had that. Not to say it's been completely painless, but we've not had the issues that other campuses had. And some of that goes to Jim G. And I said I would come back to him. What we've done is we've brought Jim in to begin to handle a lot of the early labor and employment issues. So Jesse, Jim, myself, Greg, we are constantly in contact. Which is very unique for GC's office. I know it seems like it'd be something that we all work together, but many offices have specialists. When you get OGC and NIU, you're usually getting multiple attorneys on an issue. There's very little that comes in where an issue, advice, or a litigation matter that you don't get multiple attorneys weighing in, pros, cons, opinions. So the product you get on the back end is a result of all of that discussion. And I think that's why we are very successful, because there's no attorneys that we're working alone. And Jim has provided a tremendous insight and leadership to working with Jesse and Darren. And so as we negotiate agreements, anytime there's an issue, we're spotting issues and resolving issues before they become grievances. We're solving grievances before they move to arbitration. So as a result of that, we're using less outside counsel, we're using less additional resources, and we're moving through more. I would say from the stories I've heard and my own personal experience, the union relationship now at NIU is probably one of the best, if not the best, in the state. I meet routinely with union leadership and address issues and questions. I've done that because of transparency and communication. I want to do that because it's important to know that the leadership team understands the issues, they're hearing them, and they are reaching the right people. There's been a sense in the past of issues not rising to the right level or being heard, but that is becoming something of the, and I'm happy to be a part of that work. We do not supervise the academic unions. That is Chad McAvoy, Kevin Reynolds, and Marlene Bryant. But we do work with Chad's team. Again, as we return to work, I think you probably saw in numerous publications and news stories about faculty that had a number of issues about returning to campus. We were able to meet with our two academic unions, work with Chad and his team, and we were able to do sound agreements and MOUs to allow us to get back seamlessly, help students get back in the classroom as needed for face-to-face, hybrid, or online. And we have continued to make sure we stayed on task. And I think it's been a great relationship. As you just saw in the ASAP committee, there was an action about sabbaticals. That was one of the pieces that we worked on as we looked at coming back to the semester and what changed for faculty in terms of work conditions, what we needed to be sensitive of, and how can we make sure we're partnering together to make sure that the academic enterprise continues to move forward. Designated employer representative. This is a moment, I can't say enough about Grady. The board knows him well. I work better with Greg than I think anyone has ever worked with in my 20 plus years. I think part of that is we are both avid Star Wars fans. So I think that is probably the gist of most of our conversations. He has me rooting for the Bears occasionally. And seriously, the reason why Greg and I work together is because we are committed to make sure the client reaches its goals, and we're willing to do whatever it takes to make that a reality. And this is another example of Greg stepping into a role, substantive role in HR at a time when it's needed, in addition to his other responsibilities. And I know John may be familiar with this, but Greg, could you say a few words to the board about your role as DER, as a civil service officer?
Yeah, thanks, Brian, and thank you for the kind words. I second everything that you said. I think we've got a great working relationship, and Brian's been a tremendous add to this university. And so in the beginning of the year, we were tasked with taking on the designated employer representative role. We were asked to do that. Now, the state university civil service system by law requires every university to designate a designated employer representative. So I was asked to perform that role, and I've accepted that, and I've had experience with the civil service system coming into it, but my eyes have been really opened in the past year about everything that the civil service system kind of covers. The role of the DER is to be the primary liaison and decision maker on civil service issues for NIU to the system office. So if there's ever an issue that the systems office has with NIU, they reach out to me. I work with Human Resource Services, and they've been a tremendous partner in addressing the civil service system and its requirements and trying to bolster the education of that system to the university community, because it's a complicated system to navigate. But I've been fortunate to have great partners like Volcratia Smith and Bernice Edgehill Walden in HR and their teams to coordinate on civil service issues. I also then approve any training requirements, discharge cases for civil service, also for approval of different programs that we have to go through on the civil service training program. We coordinate with the systems office on that. So it's a whole gamut of HR functions that I've had to get familiar with in the past year, but I think we've made some good progress on the civil service front.
Thanks. And if the board is wondering, why is that so relevant? So with Greg's work as a DER with civil service, my supervision working with labor relations, picking up more in-house cases and issues before they move to litigation. And also, I want to mention, this also includes working with students on student affairs. As issues have come up regarding freedom of expression, and students return to campus and all the obligations now in this environment, we've also been heavily involved in that. What this translates into is that despite all of the issues that the university faced or is facing because of COVID, in terms of legal spend outside counsel, in fiscal 21, from OGC, from us, when we go out and get counsel, we're almost halfway through the fiscal year, we have spent $700. Now, there are attorneys in Chicago and law firms that they charge that much per hour. That's how much we have spent. And I think that was just because we needed some trademark renewals done, so we had to reach out to a law firm to do that work. University spend, we are at $75,000. And out of that amount, almost $60,000 is the one matter that is really a holdover from fiscal 20 related to something in with one of our properties. And so we're just a party to that suit. So we're not being sued. So new spend, we're about $15,000. I think that alone can show you how to impact being more proactive, but also deploying our attorneys in hotspot areas throughout the university where there are issues on the front has provided a tremendous savings to the university in the back end in terms of spend and timely litigation. Next slide, please. So a quick talk about the legal environment. Illinois is probably next to California, I would think, the most complex legal environment to work and operate. And, you know, I don't want to exaggerate, but generally speaking, when OGC is involved, usually high stakes are involved. When we give advice and we look at documents and are asked to render opinions, draft documents, this is just a partial glimpse of the universe of regulations we have to consider. In many cases, when the university wants to do something, we have to look in multiple places to make sure capture the law as it is and make sure we understand how that law applies to our current policies, regs, and bylaws. The reality is we miss one of these, it can cost the university thousands and thousands of dollars. We end up in costly litigation, or we could just lose momentum on something that is an important project to the university and to our students. So we try to be thorough, and it's one reason why we use an approach of working collaboratively as a team, because it is a lot to consider. And we all have various viewpoints, specialties, and different interpretations. So when, again, you get advice from OGC, you typically are getting advice from a number of attorneys who spend a lot of time looking at these issues. Next slide, please. Again, Brev, important. I just want to highlight again the work we've done this past semester. And partly why I want to focus on that is because I've not sat down in a room with my attorneys and my team in about 8 months. But despite that, we have been deployed across the university to help in reopening and bring the students back from everything from figuring out how to do it safely to where we are now and looking at testing. Surveillance testing, and anything that has affected the movement of the university. And to be able to do that in this environment is a testament to not just the talent of the legal team, but their commitment to NIU and understanding this mission. You can find attorneys who know, but understand the importance of mission and shared governance and why their role and how it functions. That's not easy to find. And I have to say, you have a talented team, trustees of attorneys, in OGC who are committed to NIU and making the university the best it can be. Next slide, please. Next, just a few of our litigation highlights to show you some of the successes we've had. Lately, we've been successful in cases that if they have gone to litigation, we've been getting them dismissed on the front end. We've gotten a lot of cases dismissed by again, meeting together, seeing what issues are can in, and having the research done to see where we are most effective. And we've had quite a string of successes. And again, it translates into less time in protracted litigation, less money spent, so those resources can be directed where they need to be, and that's to the students and to the well-being of the university. Next slide, please. And this is a link to our website if you want to actually see some of the faces and names behind the great work. But we are more than happy to provide regular updates to the board and showcase some of the work we do, how we are able to support the university. So I thank you for this time.
You're on mute, Rita. Rita, you're on mute.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Brian. That was really informative. I don't think, at least I personally, had a feel for the scope of your work. And one of my questions was going to be, how much do you have to use outside counsel? And I can't believe how small that number is. So obviously, even with the scope of work that you have, your team is able to address that and handle it. We have some questions, and I think we're going to start with Trustee Wozniak.
It's Wozniewicz, by the way.
Sorry.
Obviously, you don't come from a Polish background. but I just wanted to say, Brian, thank you very much for your work. And I'm sure I'm speaking for the rest of the Board of Trustees in offering our condolences with the passing of your father. Send that along to you and your family. I know this is a very difficult time, and yet you are doing a great job, and we really appreciate everything that you're doing, especially during this difficult time.
Thank you.
And is there a question from Trustee Barsima?
There is. Thank you. Thank you, Rita. And thanks, Brian. I just want to say two things. I think, some of the trustees who are on the board have worked very closely with the general counsel's office over the last 4 years on a number of different tough cases and tough things to discuss. And I just want to mention, just how great the entire team is. And I know Brian threw, some words at Greg Brady, but again, I want to, for several years during a very difficult period of time, Greg served as the interim general counsel and did an amazing job. So thank you to Greg. And it's always good to see your face and hear your voice. And I just wanted to point out, Brian, you have a great team, and thank you for all the work that you and your team do. You are a pleasure to work with. So thank you.
Okay, are there any additional questions or comments? Again, that was extremely informative, and thank you, Brian, and thank your whole team for all the work that you do.
Thank you, it's our pleasure.
Okay, moving along, we are going to have a faculty report from Dr. Dufferin, if I'm saying that correctly.
You're saying it correctly.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yes, can everyone hear?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you, Board of Trustees members, for having me speak today, and Dr. Jerry Blasey for the invitation. I'm Melanie Dufferin, a professor in the School of Interdisciplinary Health Professions at NIU, and the creator and director of the NIH-funded Food Master Initiative. Dr. Blasey asked me to speak to you briefly today about my scholarship. Next slide, please. My academic scholarship began at Ohio University. Early in my career, I had an opportunity to learn about research through real-world experience with the tropical fruit native to Southeast Ohio called the pawpaw fruit. The hands-on experience with the pawpaw fruit had been such a powerful tool for my own learning. It inspired me to develop the Food Master Initiative approach. The Food Master Initiative is a compilation of programs aimed at using food as a tool to teach mathematics and science. Next slide, please. In 1999, the project began as a partnership with one elementary school teacher, Mrs. Sharon Phillips. In 2005, we received funding from the National Institutes of Health Science Education Partnership Award, and we have also received funding from the USDA. Our program infrastructure has provided a wide variety of research and outreach opportunities for teachers and students, from professional workshops and conference presentations to classrooms, after-school programs, science museums, and science festivals. Next slide, please. So let's discuss why science education research is so important. According to the United States Department of Commerce, science professions are expected to grow by almost 9% from 2014 to 2024. Preparing a scientifically literate U.S. population will not only be important for empowering productive citizenship, it will also be important for meeting the increased demand for a U.S. scientific workforce. Next slide, please. Another important aspect of keeping up with workforce demands is to ensure that we are meeting university goals for serving a diverse population. If we fail to do this, simply stated, our trending population infrastructure will simply not be able to keep up with workforce demands. In thinking about NIU and the region as an engine for social mobility, you can observe why NIU is an ideal location for investment in science education research. Our region contains a diverse population that reflects trends in U.S. population demographics, and our area is in proximity to science industry. Next slide, please. And more specific to NIU, science education in our surrounding regions builds a pipeline to NIU, contributing to our enrollment and diversity goals. Providing science education resources and conducting science education research in our surrounding schools attracts NIU students to NIU and encourages the pursuit of science careers. Next slide, please. So why should Food Master be included in a portfolio of science education research and programs? Food is relevant subject matter. From the time we are born and into adulthood, we all have experiences with food. This makes food an excellent teaching tool because we all have some level of access and experience with food. Next slide, please. So now at this point in the presentation, you might be wondering, exactly how do you teach science with food? Well, that is a great question, and the answer is the possibilities are extensive. Here I provide you with one example. This is our enzyme lesson that requires 1 ounce cow's milk, a plastic cup, 2 glucose strips, and a lactase pill. If we were face-to-face, I would give each of you these supplies on a small baggie. Next, I would have you dip the glucose strip into the milk. What you would see is that there is no indication of glucose in the milk. Next, you would crush up the lactase pill and let it dissolve in the milk for a while. Then you test the milk again with the glucose strip. This time, you would see that the milk tests positive for glucose. After this experience, the teacher and students can then discuss how the enzyme, lactase, broke down the lactose into galactose and glucose and continue with addressing the many learning objectives. Next slide, please. Using the Food Master Initiative approach, our research demonstrates the potential to increase students' mathematics, science, and nutrition knowledge and improve student attitudes towards science. Teachers report student engagement and increased teaching confidence and satisfaction. Educators utilizing the resource materials also report they are better prepared to provide their students with applied mathematics and science learning opportunities. Next slide, please. Other benefits of conducting science education research from NIU is that we are meeting the university goal of serving first-generation college students. Appearing in this photo, Jasmina and Kelly are both first-generation college students, and have had the opportunity to engage in Food Master Initiative undergraduate research. Subsequently, Food Master graduate assistantship funding has provided both the opportunity to pursue MS degrees. Now they both identify as women in science and are planning to pursue PhDs. Next slide, please. Speaking of PhDs, NIU has an amazing interdisciplinary health professions doctoral program in the College of Health and Human Sciences. Our program attracts high-performing individuals from around the country, many already working in research labs or as faculty. My experience with building a funded research program has allowed me to assist students in developing their own research through my grants course and student advising. Next slide, please. To illustrate the current scope of the Food Master Initiative, I wanted to briefly share with you our current project. The slide illustrates our Deep South Network partners. The Food Master Initiative has assisted each of these partners in creating science education research programs for their communities. The Food Master Initiative also has a spokesperson, Mrs. Sylvia Scott Stump, a world-known registered dietitian who has shared the story of the Food Master Initiative with national and international professional audiences. We have also been fortunate to have many external partners work with us on special projects. To share one example, the Food Master Initiative partners with the Love Sea Turtle Foundation to support foods education. Next slide, please. More specific to developing Food Master infrastructure at NIU are the outreach and research that take place from the university and in the region. Food Master has been fortunate to connect and partner with NIU P20, an educational research and outreach center that maintains robust science education programming. This is an example of leveraging networks to support NIU's goals. Illustrated on this slide are the various activities that have taken place in partnership with the NIU P20 and other activities in the region. Another point of national recognition for NIU was during the first stages of the pandemic, when the increase in family cooking inspired National Geographic to write an article on science tricks for the at-home cook, which mentioned NIU and the Food Master Initiative. Next slide, please. Transitioning back to research, Food Master continues to evolve from NIU as the program continues to empower students through educational excellence and experiential learning. As we pursue knowledge, share our research and artistry, and engage communities for the benefit of the region, state, nation, and world. This slide illustrates the publications, presentations, and awards resulting from the many Food Master Associated Research Teams assembled here at NIU. Next slide, please. The future of the Food Master Initiative is focused on program sustainability. The plan is to permanently integrate the Food Master Initiative as an NIU P20 Center program and continue to pursue funding opportunities with multidisciplinary teams of faculty across NIU's campus. Another goal is to have an endowed Food Master professorship. If you look towards our aspirational institutions, you will see headlines such as Tyson's Food endows chairs and professorships at University of Arkansas, or UMass trustees approve establishment of endowed professorship in food science. Establishing an endowed Food Master professorship at NIU will not only sustain the program, but will enhance NIU's values of practice, which include curiosity and creativity, equity and inclusion, ethics and integrity, and service and stewardship. With all of these components in place over the next 5 years, we believe the Food Master Initiative will be highly recognized in the state of Illinois and will continue to serve as a model to others nationwide. Next slide, please. In summary, the Food Master Initiative resources can be found free of charge and online at www.foodmaster.org. Thank you for your time, and now we have a brief period for any questions.
Thank you very much, Professor Dufferin. Are there any questions? This is a really innovative way to emphasize both science and math, and I could see how it can pull especially young people in. of the publications that you have on your last slide, how widely are they used? Do you know?
As far as our publications and resources?
Yes.
So our if you refer back to the first slide, our we reach a wide number of teachers and students with our publication materials that are available. Thanks for flipping those back. Sorry about that. That's helpful. If you can go back to the next slide. And one more.
Okay,
there, sorry. So you can see that we disseminate in quite a few classrooms. Mm-hmm. And we hold workshops, and we do outreach to teachers where they have these many, where we have these many curricular resource materials that are our publications. We're also on the USDA National Nutrition Agricultural Matrix, which collects analytics for us for the numbers of teachers that we reach as well. And as far as our research publications, those are widely disseminated in circles that of individuals and professionals that do science education research, mainly those that are funded through NSF and NIH. We all work very closely together in different arenas and access each other's professional research. And of course, teachers and other people can view those as well because they're in NIH PubMed.
Thank you. And we have a question from Trustee Butler.
Hi, sorry, I turned my camera off because I was looking so closely at the screen. It was a bit bizarre. I'm wondering if you could help with an example of how a math concept or a science concept might be taught through this methodology.
So could you go back to slide 8, please? So here I provide one example of how we might teach a scientific content with using cheese and talking about lactase. So this is an example of how we could go through each of the, go through digestion and look at breaking apart lactose into galactose and glucose and emphasizing these concepts. Our curriculum scales the concepts up and down, so we tend to teach students about food safety and then weights and measures. With food safety, we have them do at-home food safety inspections. We have them use Glowgerm to wash their hands. With weights and measures, we will have them, they actually make a chocolate chip cookie recipe, so we walk them through how to accurately measure with household ingredients and then weight measures. And then the end of their product will be when they're finishing measuring everything out accurately, then they'll have chocolate chip cookies at the end. So we try to use ingredients that are low cost and accessible to teachers. And we try to aim to have some type of food product at the end that they're able to eat. But the possibilities are so extensive of the different concepts and extensions you can do. So all of our curricular materials have that laid out for our teachers.
And I believe we have an additional question from Trustee Barsima.
Yes, thank you, Rita. And thank you for the work and for taking the time to talk to the trustees about this. This is really interesting work. How difficult is it, or has it been, or will it be, to as you incorporate food into learning, both math and science, to look at the environmental side of it and how food and the food that we consume i.e. vegan or vegetarian, you know, can have an impact on the environment. Is that an area where you've gotten any resistance or you're exploring using within the classroom to help use this to show how food can have an impact on the environment and climate change?
That's a great question. If you could go back to the slide that has the love sea turtle on it. It's if you move forward, sorry about that. So there it was. So that was a great question. So one of our anticipations and hopes is that we will be able to work with the P20 as an outreach arm in collaboration with NICS, our new sustainability center. And a great concept that fits into this is where Foodmaster actually started with its second grant award that it had. We partnered with the Love of Sea Turtle Foundation, and we did a camp that's called Upstream Downstream. And they had three different components, which was water, food, and environment. And we built a really strong collaboration where we started training. First, we started working with youth directly, and we were looking at curriculum that was trying to teach them what happens upstream impacts downstream and how food played into all of this. And then over the years, we've created a really robust youth leadership model. So now we're using the youth leaders, which are high school students, we train them all year, and then they engage students throughout the community in a peer mentorship relationship. And the Love of Sea Turtle Foundation, Foodmaster helps support all their foods education operations. But we've also been fortunate to see all the different things that they do with paint the drain and having students do environmental advocacy and those different type of activities. We've primarily supported their food nutrition activities, and we work with them on the gardens. So this is a good example of how we can tie food into environmental issues. And so we're exploring that. We continue to develop it. And then just recently I've met another scientist who's a physicist, and she has a program called No Watts Cooking, and she talks about energy and has all kinds of sustainability issues. And so we're reaching out to form a partnership with her as well. So I do see Foodmaster going in that direction in the future. Great question.
Yeah, no, and please no one on this call take offense, but it is harder to turn around the adults because we're already set into our patterns and our behaviors from a food consumption standpoint, and so I think the focus has got to be on the K through 12, the students that you're focused on, to get them from the start to understand the food that they eat and the impact on climate change and on the environment. And, we have an example in our family where, one of our children, and, we've tried to influence, what they eat and such and make them aware of the influence. And, you get the yeah, 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 but they go back to their old habits until their 10-year-old daughter comes home from school and says, I learned in school today that if we eat red meat and we eat too much of it, it's bad for the environment. And therefore, mommy, I want us to eat less red meat. And boom, the family changed their habits immediately. So it, this is the age group that we need to focus on relative to how food impacts our world. So it's great to hear that you've got that on your radar screen. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a great observation.
Are there any additional questions for Dr. Dufferin? If not, thank you very much for a very informative presentation. And you can't see our chat room, but the comments on it are remarkable, creative, amazing. So really appreciate you bringing that forward.
Thank you. All right, thank you so much for having me. I have one last slide at the end to amuse everybody. If you can show it, I don't know. I just thought I would leave you with some humor for the day.
I don't think we can see it yet. Is it possible to go back or?
If not, that's okay.
No, I think, and we could all use some humor. We'll have to hedge it some other time. Huh? Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. You guys have a wonderful meeting. Oh, there's humor.
Okay, now we see it.
These are like science dad jokes. I think they're
wonderful. Our science is small there. I hope you enjoy them and you guys have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Okay. That put a smile on everyone's face. That was good. Moving right along, are there any other matters to come before the committee today? Our next meeting of the committee will be February 18th, 2021, and I'm sure we're all looking forward to 2021, and hopefully it will be a better year than 2020's been. May I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Wozowicz.
Seconded, Gales.
Jessica, would you call the roll for a vote?
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Montel Gales?
Yes.
Trustee Veronica Herrero?
Yes.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Yes.
Trustee Aiden Shields?
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wozowicz?
Yes.
Board Chair Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Committee Chair Rita Athes?
Yes. This concludes the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee meeting, and we will reconvene for the Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities, and Operations Committee meeting. But I do, before we go, want to thank Dr. Blasey and all of his team for a very informative meeting today. Appreciate it.